Morning, everyone. Glad to have all of you with us today, and visitors, we're glad that you're with us as well. Please come again and let us know, let us get to know you, stay around a little bit, and come again. Amazon.com lists over 100,000 items this morning and books about mothers. Barnes & Noble carries about 6,000 books this morning about motherhood. And some have said that Facebook has over 1 million pages with mother in the titles. I didn't do that research. But whether it is JCPenney, Macy's, or Walmart, they will make sure to help you find the perfect heartwarming gift to celebrate your mom. And to every woman in this room, you are an honored creation of God. And for every woman who has been gifted with bringing life into the world, you have been honored by that blessing. But to all of us in this room, you have been given the extraordinary in the ordinary. We have been given life through a woman. And that's what our culture honors today. Though it is not always for everyone a day that lifts our hearts, whether we have lost our mom, or we are distant from them, or we have borne burdens that many callously ignore on days like today because of barrenness or loneliness, the Bible still says for us to give consideration to them. And this morning I want to talk about that. One mother who in a very real sense was a mother of grace. Even Paul tells us in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 1. This is speaking to Christians. Honor your father and your mother. Those are the words he says, followed with, this was the first commandment with a promise. Now he'll tell us in the reading that what that blessed promise is that you and I would live well and live long on the earth. And as the country preacher would say, honor mom or get a whooping, that's what that really meant. Man, I'm just not doing very good today in the joke department. But God has throughout time in scriptures honored many mothers of both the Old and the New Testaments. In a book by John MacArthur called 12 Extraordinary Women, he lists Eve as the mother of all the living, Sarah as the one who hoped against hope, Rahab, the harlot who was redeemed, Ruth, the one who was loyal and lovely, Mary, the blessed among women, Elizabeth, the faithful and true, and then he calls Hannah the mother of grace. Hannah is our subject today, requested to me, and she is one of the most recognizable women in Scripture for many reasons, yet ironically, she doesn't occur all throughout Scripture. But perhaps it is because her story begins at the beginning of 1 Samuel, where the life of Israel's history begins to develop with the prophets, who that first prophet, Samuel, plays a large part in the development of the nation. And without that, Hannah, there would not have been Samuel. But I think the reason we think about her mostly is because we remember her story is one of deep anguish over not being able to be a mother. We recall her time at the temple, taking her request to God in prayer. And what person, especially a mom, would not be impacted by Hannah's bold move to take the little blessing that she had asked for, little blessing that God finally gave to her, and taking that little blessing and leaving that blessing in the care of someone else. Hannah's story is the story about the unexpected, the unimaginable, the unbelievable grace of God. And against all odds, when all seems hopeless and lost, you need to see that God can do great and gracious things in your life. Hannah's story is the story of God's great reversal. Taking Hannah's mourning into a song of joy, her sorrow into the singing of praise, her despair into the prayer of joy, and her barrenness into life itself. Because God always brings life out of death. Read with me beginning in 1 Samuel chapter 1. We'll read the entire chapter, reading from the Christian Standard Version. There was a man from Ramathaim Zophim in the hill country of Ephraim. His name was Elkanah, son of Jehoram, son of Elihu, son of Tohu, son of Zuph, an Ephraimite. He had two wives, the first named Hannah and the second Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah was childless. This man would go up from his town every year to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord of armies at Shiloh, where Eli's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, were the Lord's priests. Whenever Elkanah offered a sacrifice, he always gave portions of the meat to his wife Peninnah and to each of her sons and daughters. But he gave a double portion to Hannah, for he loved her even though the Lord had kept her from conceiving. Her rival would taunt her severely just to provoke her, because the Lord had kept Hannah from conceiving. Year after year, when she went up to the Lord's house, her rival taunted her in this way. Hannah would weep and would not eat. "Hannah, why are you crying?" her husband Elkanah would ask. "Why won't you eat? Why are you troubled? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? On one occasion, Hannah got up, and they ate and drank at Shiloh. And the priest Eli was sitting on a chair by the doorpost of the Lord's temple. Deeply hurt, Hannah prayed to the Lord and wept with many tears. Making a vow, she pleaded, "Lord of armies, if you will take notice of your servant's affliction, remember and not forget me, and give your servant a son, I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and his hair will never be cut." And while she continued praying in the Lord's presence, Eli watched her mouth. Hannah was praying silently, and though her lips were moving, her voice could not be heard. Eli thought she was drunk and said to her, "How long are you going to be drunk? Get rid of your wine." Hannah replied, "No, my Lord, I am a woman with a broken heart. I haven't had any wine or beer. I've been pouring out my heart before the Lord. Don't think of me as a wicked woman. I've been praying from the depth of my anguish and resentment." Eli responded, "Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant the request you've made of him. May your servant find favor with you," she replied. Then Hannah went on her way. She ate and no longer looked despondent. The next morning, Elkanah and Hannah got up early to worship before the Lord. Afterward, they returned home to Ramah. Then Elkanah was intimate with his wife Hannah, and the Lord remembered her. After some time, Hannah conceived and gave birth to a son, and she named him Samuel because she said, "I requested him from the Lord." When Elkanah and all his household went up to make the annual sacrifice and his vow offering to the Lord, Hannah did not go, but explained to her husband, "After the child is weaned, I'll take him to appear in the Lord's presence and to stay there permanently." Her husband Elkanah replied, "Do what you think is best, and stay here until you've weaned him. May the Lord confirm your word." So Hannah stayed there and nursed her son until she weaned him. And she had weaned him, she took him with her to Shiloh, as well as a 3-year-old bull, half a bushel of flour, and a clay jar of wine. And though the boy was still young, she took him to the Lord's house at Shiloh. There they slaughtered the bull and brought the boy to Eli. "Please, my Lord," she said, "as surely as you live, my Lord, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. I prayed for this boy, and since the Lord gave me what I asked him for, I now give the boy to the Lord. For as long as he lives, he is given to the Lord." And then he worshiped the Lord there. It's a moving story about a woman's love. But yet there is a twist in the story that most people would not consider normal. A woman who prays for a child, but yet gives that child to the care of another, in the care of the Lord, but still the care of another. But there's a lot of things that I think the more we think through it, the most amazing story about her becomes true. You see, Hannah was unable to bear a child for a long time. Now, the Bible does not specify how long Hannah was barren, but according to the Midrash, it could have been 19 years, or at least they say it was 19 years. Now, I'm not going to tell you how they come up with that number. I'm not sure that that's terribly critical, but I want you to realize, number one, she was his first wife. Hannah was. And like most parents, they start having kids, at least in that time, almost right away. So probably it would have been self-evident within a year or two that Hannah was not able to have a child. But yet they continued to try. One source tells us that it was Hannah's idea, much like Sarah to Abraham, to recommend to him to have another woman by whom he could have a child if Hannah could not. And so wife number two appears, this lovely woman that all of us never want to ever meet, Peninnah. And she immediately starts having children. Now, all you ladies know your cycle. You can't have five children in 2 years. It takes a little bit of time. So you have to add to the marriage of Hannah to her husband the years of her own absence of being able to have children, adding wife number two, and then all the children that when we read about this conversation now with Hannah and Peninnah, those children are older. Those children are going with all of them to the assembly to worship at Shiloh. 19 years does not sound unbelievable. How long did you wait to have a child? I know I'm speaking to some who have not. Where does your patience go? Add to this 19 potential years is Peninnah's unrelenting provocations and bitter jabs. It's no wonder she spent many nights crying and unwilling to eat, the Bible says. So here's Hannah enduring all of this thoughtlessness on the part of her. Peninnah, I don't know what she said, but I can imagine her saying things to Hannah like, "Oh, could you go over there and pick up my son's garment? Could you go over here and help me gather food for my daughter today?" You can imagine what that would have done to the heart of Hannah. The text doesn't say that's what Peninnah said, but the Bible tells us that that's what Peninnah did. Unrelenting provocation and bitter jabs. What is it in us that we want to harm people so much with our words and our deeds? Say it was her jealousy on Peninnah's part, but I'm not sure what Peninnah had to be jealous of, except we might suggest that her husband loved Hannah more. Well, Hannah was first. But the point is that the reason we make these statements, these bitter jabs, these provocations, is simply because we're thoughtless. And when Paul tells us as Christians in Philippians, "Make my joy complete by thinking the same way, having the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose, do nothing out of selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility, consider others as more important than yourselves. Everyone should look not to his own interest, but rather to the interest of others." I can almost see that in Hannah more than I can ever see that in Peninnah. The question is, can you see that in you? Why was this righteous woman forced to suffer so many years of childlessness and endless thoughtlessness? Proverbs 27, verse 21, the rabbis of the day would often say in their explanation, "For silver the crucible, for gold the furnace, and for a man the testing of his praise. The jeweler puts silver into the fire, the gold into the furnace, and fires every material in according with its strength." And hence they said that the metaphor that the rabbis are suggesting is that God refines each one in the crucible of what would really be their pride or their praise or their strength. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But if it is true, for 25 years, God refined Sarah before she ever had her son. For 20 years, she refined Rebecca. And about for the same, she refined Hannah. Ironically, Hannah is one of the three great matriarchs in their biblical history. But Hannah's husband was not blind to her suffering. He attempted to console her with words and with deeds. Notice 1 Samuel chapter 5. Chapter 1, verse 5. He says, "Here is a double portion." And it says that he did it on a regular basis. So here is this gifting of a double portion. We can argue all day long that it was because she was the first wife. But the reality is that even the Jewish teaching would say that he gave it to her with a pleasant demeanor. I don't know. There have been times in my life when I've received a gift and not a very pleasant scenario. Have you ever had a present thrown at you? It's like, okay, is this a gift or what is this? You know? These rabbis would say that they would sense, whether it's true or not, that he gave it with this great demeanor. I don't know. But the fact that it was called the double portion suggests the fact that it was the finest. He gave of her the best because he loved her. But it's also interesting, if you go back and notice in verse 8, he says, "Hannah, why do you weep? And why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad?" Three times he suggests why. And if it is true, the source that I'm quoting from the Midrash, some of those teachers suggested that he did that intentionally to signify these great barren matriarchs of their history. Why would Sarah, who was childless, sit here and cry? Why would Rebecca, who was barren, not eat? Why would Rachel, who was childless, sit herself down and be depressed? I don't know if that's really what he's saying. Number one, those are men writing about a woman's emotions, and we know that doesn't usually end very well. But here's the point. Why? I don't think he's saying that in a despair or in exasperation with her. But because he knows year after year, this has been going on, and I love you, and I love you. Don't you know that you are more important to me than 10 sons? Hannah had all the love she needed, but she still didn't have the love she needed to give a child. And she is known to us because she doesn't have something. She does not have what she wants. Year after year, Elkanah loved his wife. Year after year, Peninnah never failed to remind her of her absence of children. Year after year, Hannah prayed that God would give her a child. And she prayed. Pouring out her soul to God, a beautiful song that you can read about in chapter 2, after the birth of the son. A prayer that would not have really reflected a difference in her demeanor except the joy that comes from it, but she continued to pray. It's not like she started praying after the boy was born. And yes, there's great parallel between the events of Hannah's life and Mary's, and the Magnificat of Mary's praise at the birth of Jesus, or at the mothering of Jesus, and here is Hannah. But here's the point. Peninnah had kids. She had boys and she had girls. And even though her womb was empty because she had given birth to all of these children, her mouth was full of crassness. Her mouth was full of things that would jab and harm and hurt people. Her mouth was not full of love, even though she thought she had given gifts of love to her husband. But Hannah, whose womb was empty, had a mouth full of humility, praise, prayer, and faith. Peninnah may have had many children, but she truly was the barren one. Because you and I need to realize our words matter. Proverbs 15, verse 4, kind words heal and help, cutting words wound and maim. Ephesians 4, verse 29, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as is good for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. And if anyone thinks he is religious without controlling his tongue, his religion is useless, and he deceives himself. Hannah loved God. And when Peninnah lashed out in the barrenness of her soul, Hannah loved God. So Hannah made a vow. Lord of armies, if you will take notice of your servant's affliction, remember and not forget me and give your servant a son, I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life and his hair will never be cut. I don't know if you've ever thought about that. If Samuel honored his mother's promise, Samuel had long hair. I know that's going to shake a few little feathers about preachers and their hair, but his hair was never cut. If the promise that Hannah made to God himself was honored by Samuel, the prophet of God. But she said, I'm going to give him back to you. I don't believe Hannah's bargaining with the Lord. She already proved over and over in this chapter how willingly she was to make God part of her life. She continued to go to worship with her husband. She accepted from her husband all of the gifts that he gave. It doesn't mean that she didn't stop crying. It doesn't mean, but she was accepting it. But she knew when she made this vow, it was a sacred binding as an oath. That's how urgently she not only wanted a child, but it was how urgently she wanted God to understand. Please hear me. That's why Ecclesiastes tells us, when you make a vow to God, do not delay to pay it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you have vowed. But that's the point about what Hannah did. I don't know if all women, I haven't asked all women, But I know that the moment that we got married, my wife was ready to have babies. Sorry. And I was pretty excited to have kids, but I didn't know what I was doing. Luckily, the diaper even got put on the right end of the body. But it's very clear from the reading in 1 Samuel that Hannah not only wanted the child, but she knew she needed that child. She needed that child to show her husband of her need to feel valued by him. And he showed her. But she needed to show him. So the dream for her to have a child, God answers. And then she gives the dream back to God who gave it. After Samuel was weaned, Hannah sacrificed him as an offering to the Lord to be used in God's service. Not because it was a bargain she had cut with God, but because it manifested her genuine faith in God. That God, if you will give me this gift, I will not relish in the selfishness of having this child. I will relish in the joy of the gift that you have given me, and I will give him back to you. In fact, you can go through and look in Numbers 15 about the type of gifts that she gives, showing how beyond the average normal she gave back to the Lord in this sacrifice when she gave back her son, Samuel. What I want to point out is that Hannah gave. She gave and she gave. I know that's typically true of mothers. I saw it in my own mother. I saw it in my children's mother. The Bible even tells us in chapter 2, verse 19, that she made robes and brought them to him at her annual visit when he was growing up so that she would always be able to show him that she loved him. But Hannah gave more than her all. She gave everything she could. Because Hannah's life was worship. Do you remember the text at the end? So I have dedicated him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he is dedicated to the Lord, and he worshiped the Lord there. She passed to her son her own feel, her own reality, her own faith. That worship is the most important thing. Her heartache led to prayer. Her sorrow led to praise. 19 years of suffering led to worship. What happens when you suffer? What happens when you experience heartache? What happens when you're alienated and isolated like she was by evil people? Unmistakably, she teaches us an awful lot. Mothers experience many heartaches and difficulties in life. Husbands fail them. Some leave them single moms to raise kids alone. Stay-at-home moms living one income and struggling through financial difficulties, trying to keep the family alive. Teen mothers going through life with rebellious young people or grieving children and moms. Nothing could be worse for a mother than to grieve the loss of their own child. But when troubles surround you like that, remember Hannah. The troubles that surrounded her to have just the one simple thing, a child. She sacrificed it back to him. So after Hannah fulfilled her vow of delivering Samuel to the temple, she worshiped and prophetically sang the song of 1 Samuel chapter 2. The song very similar, almost exactly duplicate, to what Mary, the mother of Jesus, sang in Luke chapter 1, 46 through 55. It's more to looking at Hannah as being a mother. She was a testament to what God will do in making you new. Because her name meaning grace, shows that she showed grace. The grace of sacrifice that she made to be able to give to her husband a son, and then sacrificing that son to give that son to God. Every year, Eli prophesied over and over and over again, "May the Lord give you other children to take the place of this one that you have given to the Lord." In chapter 2, verse 20 says, "And she had 3 more sons and 2 daughters while Samuel grew up in the presence of the Lord." Did she know those other children were to come? Certainly not. Are we told that to tell us that when you make a sacrifice, there's always a good reward? No. Yes, Job endured all of the things that he did written in the book, not because at the end of the story he knew he was going to get more and better. And when you serve God as a Christian in our culture today, if you're trying to serve Him because you're going to get a 4-car garage and 75 Mercedes Benzes, you're following the wrong God. Hannah gave up her firstborn because first in her heart was God who gave it. So this morning, a mother of grace, she was. But a truster of grace, she will always be to me.